Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. It has been over a month. For that, I apologize. I had a little lengthy trip in Africa, and I had two podcasts fall through last week, so I had to go to the old booty call of podcast guests and sent Kyle Porter a little text, just said, "Hey, you up?" And of course he responded, answered the call, and he's here to help ring in the new year. Kyle Porter, what's going on?
Not much. You know, I'm actually surprised that I'm the guest here. I figured it would be either just you by yourself reading poetry to Justin Thomas just out loud for an hour, or I thought you might just call Thomas's cell phone and just tell him to put it, you know, to the side, and just, it would just be you listening to him, like, traveling back to the continental United States after he burned the island of Hawaii to the ground. So I'm grateful to be here, following up Rory and Spieth. I mean, it's a big honor. I followed up DeChambeau on Shane's podcast.
Man, you are I don't know how to describe that, but I mean, you're like the safety net to fall back on here. I haven't gotten to, like, share any takes forever because I've been lucky enough to interview some of the top players in the game. I need to be able to get some things off my chest though. Like, nobody tunes into those to hear me talk. No one tunes into these to hear me talk anyways. But we have a lot to talk about this time around. It's been a while, first of all, since we've caught up. I just realized we haven't done one, the two of me and you, since August, I think, after the PGA, other than the Ryder Cup one, which was just a very different one. A different experience. But
the best lingering part from that is we were in my hotel room, all four of us, you, me, Kevin Van Valkenburg, and Brendan Porath, and I was working on something, and you guys were trying to get started, and was it Porath that said, you writing some takes over there?
What are you writing over there, takes? We recorded that like 1 a.m. That's still one of my favorite podcasts ever, because we were just
favorite weeks ever.
Yeah, we were only like 2 beers deep, but we were so drunk on what happened that day that we were just sounded like idiots in that thing, but it was great. But I'm having trouble like really understanding how we let this happen, meaning I don't think I could have hyped Justin Thomas any more than I have, and I still didn't see this coming. How did we let this happen?
I don't know. You know, I was thinking about this, and I was actually thinking about this last night. I was preparing some takes for today, and we should have seen it coming more than we did. It's really hard because, I mean, now he's won like 4 out of his first 75 events on the PGA Tour, which is just outrageous. I mean, it's an incredible percentage. And I think Spieth kind of ruined us in terms of like what the trajectory of a young American superstar is. I mean, and I realized it after the Tournament of Champions. It's not that him winning the Tournament of Champions made him a superstar, but it made me realize that this has been his trajectory all along. He's been a superstar at every level, and it's sort of like sinking in now that he's won back-to-back tournaments, I guess.
I've always kind of felt a bit too close to it. Like, I want to project him to be...
Like your kid?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I want to believe that he's, like, one of the best, like, players in the world, but didn't, like, want to... Again, couldn't trust myself on that instinct. Because I remember you wrote in your predictions for 2017, I was reading it, and you said Justin Thomas moves into the top 10, and I was like, well, wait a second here, Porter. Let's not get too carried away. 2 weeks into the year, he's ranked 8th in the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. It is weird because... I don't know, and I don't know if this is, again, like the Spieth effect, but he sort of has gotten drowned out a little bit. Like, these guys that we think of as top 10 guys, like, you feel like you've heard about them from being 17, 18 years old, and for whatever reason, I mean, obviously those close to golf, like deep inside golf, know about him or whatever, but it's not like he was hyped like a Tiger or a Phil. And Spieth was even a little bit like that at the beginning. Like, people who were close, who followed college golf, were like, oh, yeah, Spieth's amazing. But it wasn't like, I don't know, nationally it wasn't as big of a deal, and it sort of feels the same way with Justin Thomas. I know what you're saying, though, about being too close to it, because still I'm like, I mean, I know he's amazing, obviously, he's top 10 player in the world, but it just still feels like, wait, this is our guy, like, is he allowed to do this? Like, should he really be in the top 8 right now? So it's definitely strange, but it's also really exciting.
He won by seven. He won by seven shots. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, and Spieth goes to Hawaii and shoots 35 under and gets beat by 14 strokes combined over the 2 weeks. I mean, that's remarkable to me. Like, if you told Jordan Spieth 2 weeks ago he was gonna shoot 35 under for the two events, he would have thought he was at least getting one win, if not both of them, and he didn't even come close.
He didn't even sniff it.
It was crazy.
He won 3 out of 5 events, none of them within 3 shots. And then, do you understand? I mean, I'm sure you do, but I'm not sure people understand how hard it is to run away with an event on like a very easy setup. Like those setups, like pretty much everyone goes deep. It is so hard to go so much deeper than everyone else. Look at like the big shot different, like big gaps or big wins, margin of victory. Obviously, think back to like Tiger U.S. Open 2000. He shot 12 under. The next guy was +3. When Rory won the U.S. Open, he was like 16 or 17 under. And when he won the PGA, he was 12 under. Usually when you shoot 27 under, there's a guy at like 24 or 25. It's really hard to really separate yourself. But he just set the PGA Tour scoring record. Like, I still kind of am in disbelief. And it's funny. I stayed up. So first of all, he only wins in the Pacific, which is just the worst for anyone watching in Europe. It's terrible. I told him when he won in Malaysia to please make sure the next one is in a time zone that is much more viewable for me. He somehow just keeps making it worse. Hawaii is like the worst place for me. I gave up. I didn't even have to watch it yesterday. I didn't even watch the finish. I went to bed.
Yeah, I don't blame you. And the funny thing about that, so I saw him at Riviera last year at the whatever it's called. I forget. I don't even. That tournament has had like 50 names. But let's just call it Riviera. And I saw him on the range, and we were talking, and I said, I don't know if I've told you this before, but I said, good luck, man. You know, I'm rooting for you to get your first win soon. And I'd forgotten that he had won the Malaysia. And then I, like 15 minutes later, it just hit me like all at once. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I cover golf for a living. This is embarrassing. And, so I sent him a message later, and I was like, what I meant to say is good luck getting your first win where I'm not up at 2 a.m. trying to watch it. he was like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. But it was really like, I really want to unfollow you on Twitter probably.
One time, this was like, I want to say like summer 2007 or something. I met Mike Conley, who's is he still playing for the Grizzlies? No, I don't even follow basketball that much.
Got the highest, the biggest contract in NBA history.
Okay. Well, I met him at a bar, and I was talking to him, and I was just like, you know, whatever, talking anything. And I asked him how he liked playing in Vancouver. And I didn't realize until like 4 years later that I had asked him that. And I was like, oh my God, he plays in Memphis. But it took me 4 years to realize that I had messed that up, and when I did, I couldn't have felt more dumb. So, can you? One thing I think is also getting underrated with what JT just did. We're gonna do this JT thing for a while. So if you're sick of this, you might as well tune out now. But
you can just skip ahead to about the 48-minute mark when we start talking about something else.
Can you imagine winning on like 2 more different golf courses too?
Yeah, that's remarkable. It was funny because I understand Kapalua a little bit more just because he's very much. I mean, he's the ambassador, right? Like he's not laying up on anything. But it was funny to watch him. It was funny to watch like him and Zach Johnson playing the same group at the Sony, because JT was taking some cuts that I was like, bro, you're gonna tear something. Like on 18, some of the lines he was taking, it was a joke. And I think that it was really obviously impressive what he did, but like you said, to do it on two different courses like that, the Sony impressed me more. And he said, just because it was a bigger field, you still have the top guys, Spieth, Rose, Hideki, but he said afterwards that he was more satisfied with the margin of victory than with actual like getting to 27 under. And just as a reference to what you said a while ago, of it's beating Justin Rose by 7 and Jordan Spieth by 8. Spieth said it. He's like, I feel like we were playing two different tournaments, and it really did. And I couldn't be more impressed with what he did.
The lines he was taking, I said, it's disrespectful. I mean, it was disrespectful to golf course designers. It was offensive, some of those lines he was taking. I find it interesting how well he plays some of these. You know, he is this kind of bomber style player, but I think he tends to like these style golf courses more than even a Kapalua. He loves Silverado, which isn't really that much of a bomber's paradise, if I'm thinking right. He loves Sawgrass, which is definitely not a bomber's paradise. So yeah. I feel like, and I've thought this before, and this is kind of predates the no laying up days in the podcast, but he is everything like that I wanted Kyle Stanley to be, just a guy that can bomb the ball, but he, a smaller guy that just, you know, is shaped like a rubber band and can swing at 120 miles an hour and 180 mile an hour ball speed. But he's so well rounded. And honestly, the part that impresses me the most is his putting and the fact that he just seems to have a different kind of confidence level right now. And when he's standing over a 15-foot putt, over other than like Spieth, there's not really many guys I'm like that much more confident that he's going to make that putt.
Well, that was the thing that struck me about Sony, is that I don't know, I didn't watch all 4 days, I watched a lot of it, but it felt like he made like 10, 13-foot par putts, and I don't know, I mean, obviously he didn't make that many, but it felt like he made so many long putts to keep these rounds of 65, 65, 64, and the 59 going. That, yeah, just saying it out loud.
I know, it's ridiculous.
You can laugh, it's fine. It was a, yeah, what's the word for, not canary, what does Tron reference, the birdies?
The Audubon Society.
Like, he destroyed some birdies at the Sony Open, but really it was those long par putts to me that were incredibly impressive to keep those rounds, keep the momentum of those rounds going. Because the last couple of days he didn't really get going for the first 6 or 7 holes. He didn't make a birdie until the 8th hole on Sunday, and then he just commits an act of arson on the back nine, you know, with all the birdies that he made. So I don't know. I'm surprised the USGA hasn't put out a statement yet on what happened in Hawaii.
Like, we're coming for your revenge on you.
Yeah. Like, Aaron Hills is actually going to play 9,500 yards instead of 8,000. I did want to ask you, I was thinking about this last night. If you were given, like, if you could somehow time machine Tiger at the 2000 US Open to Justin Thomas right now, who would you pick in that, like, just match play with $1,000 of your money on the line?
I mean, that Tiger performance is like the greatest of all time, isn't it? I don't think I can. It's a different animal to do it on a golf course like Pebble than a course like Wailea, I would think. I don't know. How well does what Thomas just did translate to like a U.S. Open style setup? I have no idea. So,
the reason that I know you're in the tank for Thomas is that I was kidding about that. Like, that was supposed to be a joke.
I was wondering. I was taken back by the question. It didn't sound like you were joking. And I was like, I got to take him down from this one a little bit softly, but I got to take him down.
And you're in. Like, you're like, oh, but you know.
I did answer that very seriously. Can we talk about how there's 2 par fives on this golf course, and so he plays 8 par fives in 4 rounds, and he played them in 10 under, and he didn't make a par.
Yeah.
They're kind of a joke, par fives, I know, but he was first in strokes gained off the tee, first in strokes gained tee to green, first in driving distance, fourth in strokes gained approaching the green, and second in strokes gained putting.
It's pretty good.
Is that good? The big question is, how does this make you reassess his ceiling at this point?
Yeah, that is a good question, and that's sort of what I was referencing earlier with I feel like his trajectory has been that of a superstar all along. I don't know. I guess I don't really know what I thought his ceiling was coming into the year. I think I thought of his ceiling coming into the year as winning 15 career events and 2 majors. Would that be a fair ceiling coming into the year?
Yeah. It's always hard with ceiling, right? Because, I mean, like, Rory's ceiling might be, like, 12 majors. We're talking about ceiling, like, the absolute best he can do. So, like, if you guess wrong on a guy's ceiling, you've kind of screwed it up already. You know what I mean? Like, if we're talking about, like, absolute best possible potential,
yeah.
You can't. That shouldn't be something that you adjust. Even though I just asked you, like, are we adjusting the ceiling? But you know what I mean. Like, we should be able to see what somebody's potential is. I think for me, it kind of makes me reassess what I think his actual potential is. So,
yeah.
I don't disagree with 2 majors, 15 wins. But man, are we talking? Like, it's about to get really crazy. Are we talking like a Phil career?
Well. Okay, so here's my thing. Here's one of the problems, and I was saying about this last night too. Just generally, is we don't really know how to assess careers of young guys because we're basing it on the careers of like a Jim Furyk and even a Phil or a Tiger. Who I gotta say this, they didn't play in as tough of a. Of a generation as these guys are currently playing in. I mean, if you're like Will Wilcox or Henrik Norlander, like, why do you even show up to major championships?
Where did you get those two names from?
I don't know.
It's Willie Wilcox. It's Willie Wilcox now.
Well, he can take his yellow ball and go do something.
Go play somewhere else.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to win in this era, I think it is. I think it means more. I think it's harder to win right now. And I wrote a column about this last year. But my point was, in what industry ever in the history of capitalism have you ever infused more money, like a lot more money, into that industry, and it's not gotten more competitive? That's what's happening right now in golf. And it started happening when Tiger entered, and now you're seeing sort of the fruit of that. You're seeing the effects of that. And so I don't really know, like, I think that winning 25 times on the PGA Tour is close to the equivalent of what Phil's done, which is when, I think, 42 or 43 times. Do you feel like there needs to be a kind of a readjustment of what we consider an elite career?
Yeah, follow the money, first of all. I'm with you. Props on bringing capitalism into this argument as well. But... without a doubt. I mean, you look at, I'm working on like a new series that we're going to do where I'm going to look back just kind of at a random major championship from 10, 12, 5 years ago, whatever.
I like that.
Just kind of talk about, just kind of highlight some things that you probably forgot about. I don't know. We all remember Tiger winning the 06 Open Championship. But like, do you remember, you know, what, like, I was watching, saw highlights the other day of the 2012 PGA. Like, Vijay Singh led alone on the weekend of the 2012 PGA. So I think, like, if you look back at some of the things that happened in the mid-2000s in a lot of those tournaments, it really it's kind of astonishing. Like, the fact that in that 06 Open Championship, Anthony Wall, Greg Owen, and Kichiro Fukubori were in second place after the first round. Like, that's the kind of things that happened back then, whereas I just feel like it doesn't happen at the same frequency here. So I'm with you. I don't know what the scale is, 25, you know, wins in this era to whatever, 42, 43 that Phil has won, but I definitely think that it's not the same, you know, yeah, it's a sliding scale, and I don't know how you equate it, but there is definitely something to what you just said.
Yeah, I don't know. Those are some amazing names, by the way. I this goes back to what Rory said on your podcast a couple months. Shout out to Rory for being on your podcast, by the way. But just about like winning majors, and people don't really, and you and I have talked about this for a long time, the people that we kind kind of chat with have talked about it. Winning majors is not a joke. Like, winning, and this is where I think it's going to get interesting, and I think this has been a Shane Bacon thing, but the one major club, or maybe this was, maybe you came up with this, but the one major club is going to be just rife with golfers from this era. I mean, Jason Duffner, Webb Simpson, Jim Furyk, just guys like that. Like, if you can get out of that one major club, like if you're Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, if you can get two, then I think that's a. I mean, I think two majors is like automatic Hall of Fame status right now. I just do. I mean, it's just, it's so hard to do, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Thomas and going beyond him, Patrick Reed and some of these younger guys do at the majors this year.
Let's just for argument's sake, let's make that number three. That has nothing to do with the fact that Zach Johnson has two, okay? But we're gonna slide that number up there to three, okay? We'll make it that one. I've made the point many times. Every time that we do this era talk or talk about anything like that, or you know, some people want to claim Jason Day is the king of golf now and all this stuff, it's like, no, just because Rory hasn't won a major in the last 2 years doesn't mean that, like, his four majors are Rory's younger than Jason Day, right? So just the fact that, yeah, you know, Day is one right now and Rory's two, if you stack up their resumes next to each other, it's not really a close comparison. Four majors versus one is not a close comparison. And yeah, the point I made with Rory too was just, I feel like people forget how many majors four is. And he made the great point. He said, you know, Day and DJ need three more majors to get to me. I am three away from Arnold Palmer. And I also saw something I said last summer where I gave Spieth and Rory both six more majors. Did I overestimate that one, or?
I mean, six is just so many.
It was when they held all four. In my defense, they held all four at the same time, and yeah. I thought they were going to win like the next eight as well. So
that's the thing. It's so easy to get caught up in that. By the way, Rory sounded a lot cooler than you did when he said three more, and I get to Arnold Palmer. The accent was just terrific.
Yeah, it sounds cooler coming from him than it does from me. That's a given.
But you know, talking about Zach Johnson, do you think? By the way, Bacon thinks that Zach has been working out with Rory. He said he looked pretty thick at the Sony Open.
Okay.
Do you think in 100 years that people will look back on the golfers that have won Augusta and St. Andrews, you know, like Tiger and Nicholas and I can't even remember. I think Faldo did it. I can't remember. And be like, Rory's going to do it. And then look at Zach Johnson and be like, what? Who? Who's this guy?
Who's this guy? I like how you just slide that in there. Yeah, Rory's going to, he's going to do it. He's going to win it.
Well, he would be going for it this year if he hadn't been playing soccer back in 15.
That's
or
true.
Whenever,
he was going to win that one. He was definitely going to win that one. Do you, this is kind of, I've been asked this by several people, and I feel like people want this answer to go a certain way. It can sound kind of like a Monday morning radio show talk question, but stacking up the resumes at this point, it's not a comparison, JT versus Spieth, but some people want to entertain, like, going forward, JT or Spieth, whose career would you take?
Yeah, so just erase what they've done right now?
I would say to level out the question. I don't think many people are going to say at the end of their careers they think JT will have a stronger resume. If you give Spieth a two major lead in that category, we just talked about how important those majors are. But yeah, going forward, erase what they've done to date. What would you take?
I think it's a real question.
I think so too.
And it feels hot takey because it's like, okay, we need to calm down. Like Thomas just won a 32 man event in Kapalua and the Sony. It's not like he, you know, took the Players or a WGC or anything like that. But I don't know. I guess Spieth, but. It feels a little bit like Thomas's like he's got like a half gear beyond Spieth when they're both going really well. But I think the thing that is going to win, I think Jordan Spieth's going to win multiple U.S. Opens, and I think it's just because he's so mentally tough and such a he's just a tough putter. Like he just won't make bogeys and he won't make double bogeys. And I don't know. I guess I'd go Spieth.
I equate it to this. You know how, like, leading up into, like, a fantasy football draft throughout the summer, right? You can see rankings, fantasy football rankings, and I don't know who's projected number one for next year. Like, probably Ezekiel Elliott, right? Then take, like, the number eight running back on the board. Come, like, week, like going into that year, you would never think of taking that number eight guy over Ezekiel Elliott, right? But, like, come week four, couldn't your perception of that be totally different? Like going into this season, I don't think 2 weeks ago we wouldn't be asking ourselves this question, but now I don't know. It's kind of one of those things you got to try to get ahead of. Not that it matters what we actually say, but and like you got to try to get ahead of and think of like what these guys actually their actual abilities are. I mean, we like to think we know which direction guys are going to go and whatnot, but I mean, I don't know. It's a fair question. I think the I'm still taking Spieth in that. We've not seen Thomas do it without with anything less than his A game. You know what I mean? Like he's not hung around. Look at what Spieth did in these last couple weeks alone. He's like right there in the top five in competition until we see JT do that on a consistent basis on top of winning. Again, that's asking a lot, but I think that's where I'll err on the side of Spieth in that regard. But it's interesting that we're even having the conversation at this point. I don't think it's too hot takey.
Yeah, it really is. You know what was impressive about Spieth in Hawaii is just his, and I think you talked to him about this also, but his strokes gained on approach shots.
Yeah.
He switched his irons at the Australian Open, I think, and he was number one in the field at the Sony Open in strokes gained approach shots. And really, I mean, he didn't putt that great. I can't remember what his strokes gained were, but it wasn't the way that he normally puts. I think he's going to have a huge year. I think he's going to be awesome this year. And I thought he was awesome last year. People just lose their minds about it. And he said it best, actually. It was, if I had the same year I had in 2015, I'd win 50 majors and 125 events. And that's, you know, that's absurd. I think both of those guys are, I mean, really going out on a limb here, but I think Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth are going to be really good at golf in 2017.
Yeah, he was 53rd in strokes gained putting at the Sony last week, and he was second in strokes gained tee to green behind only JT. But you know what I love is that the U.S. team, the Ryder Cup team, won 17-11 this year, and JT wasn't on that team. Now, look.
Yeah. he's automatic President's Cup this year. Is he getting close to locking up that 2018 spot?
I don't know. I mean,
are we already talking about the 2018 Ryder Cup?
I'm surprised it took us 28 minutes into this to actually start talking about the. We got a question about pairings for the 18 Ryder Cup from Twitter.
I saw that.
Oh, well, somebody asked what Reed is going to do now that Spieth and JT are for sure going to get paired. And I said, yeah, I'm sure Captain Reed is going to let JT steal Spieth away from him.
Reed's going to hold the country hostage until he gets something in writing. Like, he's going to have to get it notarized from Furyk or something.
Oh, man. All right, have we covered JT enough, you think?
What have we missed? I don't know. He got this question, and I think it's a good one. And you saw it with Jimmy Walker a couple years ago, but it's easy to play really well in Hawaii and then not be able to keep the momentum up until Augusta, until the U.S. Open. I'm really interested to see how the rest of his 2017 plays out, because I don't think it's crazy to think if he gets a major. If he wins the Masters or the U.S. Open, he could pretty easily and probably would be Player of the Year.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already got three wins. He's won three of his last four events. Like, it's hard to overstate what he's done, but I don't know. It's going to be a really fun – it's already been, and it will be a fun year.
My only word of caution on it, I think he's even said this in a press conference or said this recently, but – it's going to change for him. Everything's going to change for him. Not quite to the level that it changed like for Spieth after winning the Masters, but the attention that's going to be on him is a completely different attention. And I think it helps that he saw like what Jordan went through mostly last year in 2016, kind of a tough year with the media, and you know, wasn't totally pleased with the narratives that were built in. And the second, just everything he does is going to be scrutinized a little bit differently now. And but he's a smart kid, and he knows that's coming, and he knows he's going to be prepared for that. And that's the only thing I would caution him, that everything's going to change. He's going to be in all the feature pairings now. He's going to be, but what's working in his favor is he was like at the forefront of people's attention, maybe not for the best reasons. I mean, it was mostly that he was friends with Spieth, and you know, SB2K, and he's a really popular player, and he was in like, you know, a lot of PGA Tour Live feature groups and all that stuff. But now it's like, now people are really going to expect stuff out of him, and when it doesn't go well, he's going to get those questions, and we'll see how well he handles that stuff. But
can we stop with the asking each of them about each other stuff? Like, I we get it. Like, Spieth actually gave some really good quotes on him, but it's just like, okay, like, a lot of these guys are friends. It's not like they're not like the two best friends that anyone has had, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just, it strikes me as being just kind of a little bit contrived. You know, I thought the most poignant thing that Thomas did in Hawaii, or said, I think it was after his win at Kapalua, and he was asked about just expectations and Spieth and whatever, and he was like, he was so honest about it. He just said, you know, Spieth, I can't remember his exact words, but he said something like, Spieth winning the Masters and the U.S. Open and the success of some of the other young guys, he's like, that was hard on me, and I didn't handle it well. And he's like, it's not that I wasn't excited for them, I was, but it was just like, I'm that good too. And I totally get that, because like, we've all had people in whatever industry we work in that are our peers coming up, and then all of a sudden their star kind of takes off, and you're like, wait a second, like, we're the same. And I think that can damage your psyche a little, and I don't know if it did for him. Obviously, it didn't long term, because he's number 8 in the world. But I just thought that was a really cool moment of honesty that is reminiscent of what we've gotten from Spieth and Rory over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I know I feel that way when I see one of your tweets going viral. I'm just like, man, I could have thought of that. Or when you've got a really good take, like, man, I could have thought of that. No, but that kind of... I don't know, I totally agree with what you just said, in that maybe he just had a better understanding of what his potential and what his standing in the game was than like even like some of his biggest fans did. I mean, as much as I wanted to believe it, I can't believe we're sitting here saying that he's won 3 times in 5 starts. It's ridiculous and it's awesome. But you want to go 30 more minutes on JT, or do you want to go to the other side of the pond? Are we ready to do this yet? We had our fun. Now we have to. Now it's time to get a little melancholy, I'm afraid, on this podcast.
Yeah, I need to crack open a beer or two for this next segment of the pod.
Rory McIlroy, second place finish at the South African Open, tweaked his back on Friday, considered withdrawing, toughed it out, and just announced a few hours ago he will not be playing in Abu Dhabi because of a stress fracture in his rib. 1 to 10, what's your freakout level?
That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about my freakout level. I don't know. I'm like a 4 or a 3.
Okay.
I don't. Part of it feels super precautionary, just with Augusta coming up. I don't know. I don't know the level of it. I can say I'm personally disappointed, because one of my favorite parts of January, February is the kind of the early morning Middle East tournaments, getting up and watching the final rounds of those, getting up at like 5:30 or 6 a.m. It's sort of like the Open, but even earlier, and just getting up to watch the final rounds of those. I know watching Fowler win last year, it's super fun, and I'm bummed that he's not going to be playing Abu Dhabi.
How was it? How much did you enjoy getting up this past Sunday to watch him play live at 5 a.m.?
Well, I was pissed, because I woke up at 4:30 on Sunday morning. Just, I was locked in, and Golf Channel is showing the it's on tape delay because they started early, and I was just like, this is the only people that are up are the ones that are trying to watch it live, so why not show it live and then go back and show like the last 9 holes later on.
I mean,
how is that right?
It's the DVR era. I will never understand tape delay. Like, if somebody really wants to watch and not know the result, they have full capability to record it and watch it on their own time and stay off Twitter and not know. You can't tell me it rates better to put that on tape delay. I mean, you're basically trying to trick people into thinking that it's live. I mean, otherwise, no one's tuning in to watch that. Maybe you know the result and you still want to see how it played out, but... God, I hate tape delay. I was lucky enough to be able to see it live. I had to watch it in Dutch, unfortunately, though, because I couldn't watch the Golf Channel. But
I was trying to find an illegal Sky Sports stream on my phone. I think my phone might have a virus now, actually, because I was trying to get it live, and I went to some websites that were very questionable to try to see this thing live.
I could make it an inappropriate joke, but I don't want to get you in trouble. we zoomed past the actual tournament just to focus on the injury, but for a first event out, brand new equipment, entire new equipment, everything in his bag was new, and a new golf ball, second place finish. It wasn't the best field, but I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he shot between 65 and 67 every day out there. Again, I want to say encouraging start, but here we are. The momentum is stalled here because of the injury. But I was still at the same time pretty happy for Graham Storm. I wanted to see signs from Rory. I didn't need to see him win. He's won enough European Tour titles to me that it wasn't like the same emotion as watching JT win. But happy for Graham Storm and happy to see what's so funny over there.
It's just the same emotion. You just were emotional after JT.
Emotion might not be the right word because I went to sleep, but the only thing we can talk about really is the injury at this point, because I wanted to see the momentum carry over into Abu Dhabi, but he's out for that. The future is kind of uncertain. I agree. I don't know if this was Augusta, I think he'd be teeing it up. Do you agree?
It feels like it. Yeah, you know, I thought I'm always so interested by the way that Rory it interacts and just the way he carries himself and whatever. Does it feel like sometimes that, like, even though he lost, he was more excited for Graham Storm than Graham Storm was a little bit? Like, and I don't mean that. I'm not trying to say that Rory's not competitive or anything like that. But he obviously wanted to win. But it's interesting to see his reaction after losing a tournament like that. He seemed genuinely excited for Graham Storm to win that tournament a couple months after thinking that he lost his European Tour card.
Kind of the same way with the Ryder Cup as well. I mean, he was obviously upset to lose that, but was genuinely happy for a lot of the American players and, you know, was joking around with them about their celebration and whatnot, and happy to see the American fans get rewarded for, you know, their first win in 8 years and whatnot. So I definitely think there's something to that. I thought, and somebody pointed this out to me on Twitter, I think, that I didn't even really realize it. He kind of left the scene almost immediately and let Graham Storm have the glory, and didn't do like a TV interview, I don't think. And I'm sure there were people, you know, the TV network would have been dying to have him on, but probably didn't want the focus to be on himself at that point. I'm sure he would have loved to have won the tournament. It's kind of, I think he would have been a lot more upset if it was like the Northern Trust or the Genesis Open or whatever it is now. I think if he'd have lost at Riviera, he'd have been way more upset than he was. He was down there playing that tournament as a favor and a promise to Ernie. I think he had a great time down there, and he's glad he made the trip, and it was well worth it. But, he may want to take that back now that he's injured. But I thought there was definitely something to what you just said.
He, as a bonus, he did get footage of Patrick Reed in his natural habitat out on a safari.
I thought about that too. And of course, Reed not taking up his European Tour card is what let Graham Storm play on the tour, and Storm's the only guy to beat him. So the only guy really to beat Reed in the last three, or to beat Rory in the last 3 months, is Reed, I think. So
it was amazing. Yeah, he took that video of a lion just kind of preening about. It looked like what I imagine Reed walking to the range on his off days looks like.
But dressed head to toe in red, white, and blue. What did you think of his interview with Paul Kimmage? I assume that's how you say it. I only know how to read it. But the two-part interview with The Independent.
I couldn't get enough. I wanted there to be a part three.
Yeah.
It was just, and I mean, we've talked about this a lot. Rory's obviously honesty and just genuineness, and he's such a thoughtful individual, and I don't mean that in the way that I don't mean that he is like thinks of others and is kind to others or whatever. I just mean he like thinks about what he's doing. He thinks about his own life. I think he has really high emotional intelligence. And I think that comes out in interviews, and I thought it was fabulous. I mean, just some of the quotes in there. I told Porath that I had to like check the website multiple times because some of the quotes in there, I was like, this sounds like somebody would make it up. It was almost too good. Like it was amazing. I loved it.
You thought it was from The Onion.
I did.
I was really happy with the way our podcast turned out, and then I read that, and I was like, "Damn, man, that's a difference between a journalist and me, though." That Kimmage like asked some really good questions. He really, really did his homework, and I think he's known Rory for a long time. At least it sounds like it, and really got down into some topics that I don't want to say I was afraid to bring up, but I purposely tried to avoid the Olympics just because I think that he legitimately doesn't care about it, which is fine to me, and I just don't think it's that important. I know a lot of people have tried to cram it down our throats that the Olympics is the most significant event in golf history, but I think I found the part obviously between Great Britain and Ireland and that kind of identity crisis so fascinating. I don't think I know that like when he won the 2012 U.S. Open, I can confidently say I did not understand that conundrum at all. I think a lot of people growing up in the States probably can't relate to that much just because we identify a lot by the country that we're from. And he's from a really unique place on Earth or in the Western world that really is like an identity crisis within that. And the fact that I thought he would use the word that he resented the Olympics. I found that word very interesting in that he wasn't blaming the Olympics for like this you know making him make this decision, but not a lot of athletes, Olympic athletes, have to make a decision what country they play for, and knowing the political ramifications of it, I can totally see just getting fed up with that, especially when you weren't that passionate about the event to begin with. But I just think it's awesome to have a young athlete that's willing to be that open, honest, and forthcoming, and I feel like he's just like bursting at the seams right now to be as honest as possible, and I'm not even sure like everyone really realizes how open he is about everything at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the maybe the best part to me was the crying on his hotel bed in Korea with the Pringles.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Pringles, the chips that he was eating?
I think it was. I love how you try to act like you didn't memorize this interview. No, was it Pringles?
I only read it like 11 times, but I've always been struck by his. He said this. I can't remember if it was the Jaime Diaz interview a couple years ago or what it was, but he's like, I never really knew what to do with the gift. Like he knows, and everybody knows that he's the generationally great one, and he just didn't know what to do with it, and he couldn't figure out like. That winning was it's okay to win,
yeah.
And he said it felt selfish, and I just thought it was I don't know, I've always been just so intrigued by that part of Rory, and I think it makes him just such a it was so funny to me to hear people like say they disliked him at the Ryder Cup, because to me and we follow it more closely than probably a lot of people watching the Ryder Cup, but he's one of the most likable superstar athletes in the world, not just in golf, just because of the way he thinks about things and handles himself. So I don't know, and him talking to his dad about wanting to quit because it was unfulfilling after he won as a 16-year-old. That stuff is just, I mean, that's just like heavy life stuff, you know, like that goes beyond sports, and it's really it makes him become sort of three-dimensional to me going forward.
Well, you and I should not be the authority figures on his likability. There might be some bias here. I think I'm going to save this for whenever I think we will do another podcast together in the future. And I want to understand. So it doesn't sound like he loves playing golf anymore, which is understandable. He doesn't like make it sound like he dislikes the game at all. But when we're talking about what a perfect day is for him, it does not involve going to the golf course.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the he wants to be the best European player ever, but doesn't have the goal to pass Tiger, which he should not have that goal. Nobody should ever make that as a goal. But he's 27, I think, and he's got all the money he could possibly want. So what, honestly, at that point, keeps you going, you know? I mean, I think he cares more about life than his legacy as a golfer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and he's said, or he didn't say that, but Jack Nicklaus talked about that recently. He said Rory has to decide right now, like, whether he wants to be maybe the best ever. And I was surprised to hear Nicklaus say that, because I'm pretty sure he used the words best ever. I was like, whoa, Jack, that's for me and Solly. Like, we're the ones that usually talk about that.
Rory's going to be 55, and Jack is still going to be like, oh, I think he might still beat my record. Jack's going to be 110.
But yeah, he's not. So the thing that is intriguing about that is that he's not like Tiger. Like, Tiger just wakes up and thinks about just kill housing people, like, whether it's on the golf course or on the Xbox or whatever. And Rory, you get the sense that Rory wants to, like, retire when he's 39 or 42 or something and do something else. And I don't know what that would be, but I don't know. It's almost like, so we want our superstar athletes to only care about the sport they play, to not have any other interest in life, to be wholly dedicated and fully locked into what they're doing, so that we can get the enjoyment from that. Yeah. And it's like, how selfish of us as fans to demand that of our superstar athletes. And so I don't mind that he is seemingly just not disinterested with golf, but that he and I think it might help him. You know, Tron has talked about this. Like, he's like, Rory only cares like 75 days a year, and he's awesome because of it. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think I want to be clear that I'm not doubting his competitiveness in any way. I find it such an interesting place to be in your career when you got to decide what you want. And I feel like he is very comfortable with where he is in life, and he's happy with his fiance, soon to be wife, and kind of appreciates that side of life more. But he still has this incredibly competitive streak. But it's kind of like, once you've accomplished all that you've accomplished, you have no monetary really implications going forward. What really motivates you? It's got to be your own internal will and basically a legacy. And if it kind of just comes down to how much you enjoy that chase and getting up at 5:30, going to the gym every day, and I don't know. It's gonna be really interesting to see how it all plays out. I think he's set up to play really, really good golf because of where he is in a mental state. And I'm saying this before with the injury. I don't know how long this is going to linger, but yeah, I don't know. Really.
Yeah, I hope that it didn't come off from me either. No. that he doesn't like golf, or that he doesn't care. I think he cares a lot. And I think he cares about specific things. I think he cares about the Slam. I think he cares about the Ryder Cup. He obviously cared about the Irish Open last year. That was pretty eye-opening in that interview.
He definitely cares about being the best player in this generation. So I didn't mean to glance past that either, but he definitely cares about that.
Yeah, but I think to your point, like, the more money you get, the more times you win, the fewer incentives there are. And he's not the kind of person like Tiger who just invents incentives for himself. I think it's important that he's kind of structured his lifestyle around being fit and being healthy and stuff like that, because I think if you don't, then it can kind of get away from you a little bit. But yeah, I think the more, if he gets to 8 majors or 10 majors or whatever, he's going to have so few incentives that it's like, you know, what does keep driving you? And it will be super interesting to watch the next 10 or 12 years of his career.
Well, I already guarantee that he wins 6 more majors. So, all right, let's get to some Twitter questions. Well, first of all, Jay Rigdon wanted to know, he's like, yeah, like, you'll be able to squeeze in my question after 75 minutes breaking down potential 2018 Ryder Cup pairings.
We've only gone 50, so we're good.
We got plenty of time then. Jay Barbudo wants to know, who's the next lingering young guy to finally make the leap? Rogers, Finau, someone I'm forgetting. I think it's fair to kind of transition that, because I think, like, we were, you know, both on the big train of Thomas making the leap. That it's safe to say he's made the leap, right? We're there.
Yeah, okay. He's got his Wikipedia page changed to the ambassador. So
that was
good.
Special. That was quite that was special. Awesome. That was special. I'm assuming we're leaving Kepka out of this, right? Already played on a Ryder Cup team, so I just wanted to say it. I just wanted to say what.
The first name that came to mind for me was Rogers. You know, tying Tiger is the all-time wins leader at Stanford. I don't know. I think he had a decent year last year. Obviously, didn't win. But yeah, he's, you know, I was actually thinking about we spouted out our 2018 Ryder Cup teams when we were in that hotel room taping that podcast a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And I forgot about him. If I would have remembered him, I would have put him on that team. And obviously, that's a long way away, but he's the guy for me, I think.
I can't believe you gave up the chance there to say Brandon Hagee. Like, I think it just, that automatically makes me the president of the Brandon Hagee fan club. Like, you had,
can I let you go first.
Can
I reminisce about how a couple of weeks ago you sent me a clip from one of our first podcasts, and we were weeping tears of joy over Brandon Hagee hitting irons and drivers, and I still have only seen him play like one time. I saw him at the U.S. Open in 2015. So
I think that same podcast is when we broke down. We laughed about the fact that Trump just announced he's running for president.
Your podcast has come a long way from those days. Maybe it hasn't. I'm still on here.
So. It really hasn't. Maddie Lou wants to know, do you find it weird when you're on a Twitter heater and we like all of your tweets?
You know, I want to say this seriously. Like, I have actually kind of structured the way that I treat social media around the way that you have done it, and I mean that in all seriousness. I feel like you've done such a good job, and I can't go as far as you do sometimes on Twitter.
Go as far as I do. Look at Tron's Twitter feed.
But yeah, just instead of, and I think people get a little confused on social media. They think that, like, people are volume shooters on Twitter, and that's not a great thing. You need to be shooting layups. And so, yeah, I've sort of tried to emulate what you do, and I don't know, it's been working out. I don't know if I will say I had my Justin Thomas at the Sony Open moment during the Ryder Cup last year. I don't know if I can ever do that again.
That was an out of body experience for you. Like, by Tuesday, I wasn't even on the grounds yet, and you were, like, already just blazing a trail all the way to Hazeltine.
I emptied the clip that week.
You emptied the clip by, like, what? The best one was the Ray Lewis gif, and the quote was, like, Bubba, hit the smoke. It's Patrick Reed saying, Bubba, hit the smoke. And Bubba's like, it's Tuesday, Patrick. Hit the smoke. And Patrick Reed comes out like Ray Lewis. Oh, God. This is just turning out like every podcast we do. I'm just sitting here crying, laughing.
Just giggle fest.
I'm scrolling these questions, trying to find them. I didn't sort through these at all. Now that JT has 3 wins on the year, over under 4.5 wins for the season. That's a good one.
That is a good one. 5 wins is so many.
So many wins.
I'll say under, just because I don't know. It's the same thing as when you said Spieth and Rory will win 6. It's so easy to get caught up in the moment, like right after a major, right after Thomas wins 2 straight. Winning tournaments is hard though, and especially the ones he's going to be playing in, because he's not going to play, I presume, the same schedule as he's played in the past. So, yeah, I'll say under. I'll say he wins 4.
Okay. I know my headline now for when I share this podcast. Kyle Porter does not believe that Justin Thomas is the truth.
He's never won on the continental United States.
Never. I'll go over just to go opposite of you. I think Yeah, it is so hard to win. Winning two more tournaments. I mean, that'd be a great season if he won. If he wiped out his season to date and won two more events. And if he wins two more, he's the player of the year, probably, unless somebody wins two majors, I would think. But
yeah.
Golf Unfiltered wants to know, three threats of sub-60 rounds this week, good or bad for the game?
I don't know. I don't think it's not bad for the game. It might be bad for the event. The thing I was thinking about 59, I think that it's obviously still magical right now. You've only seen eight instances of sub-60 rounds. I think you tweeted that out. There's been, what was it, how many perfect games in baseball? 24?
23 or something like that, yeah.
And only eight sub-60 rounds. I think you're going to see – I think it's still magical right now. I think you're going to see that number double in, like, the next 10 years. And so I think 10 years from now it might not be as special to shoot 59. But I don't think it's necessarily bad for the game.
Yeah, I'm with Bacon on this one. I don't get why people are complaining about, like, all this awesome stuff happening. I get, like, I don't know. You can't act like shooting 59 is an easy thing to do. I know it was really close a couple other times this week, too, but I refuse to believe that playing a golf course in 11 under par with only two par fives is not extremely impressive, regardless of what the setup is. And Whitelaw is an easy course. It's not that easy. Like, again, like I said, there's not that many par fives where you can just dominate them. So I don't know. I'm not that concerned about it. I'm realizing I glanced past the topic, though, that I know a lot of people are really, really excited about. What are your thoughts on Jim Furyk getting the captaincy for 2018? Can I share a quick nugget in that Andy Johnson, who runs does our newsletter with the fried egg, so there's about 10,000 people on our newsletter list or something like that. He said he sent a link to, you know, Furyk being named captain. Not one person clicked the link out of the 10,000 people that received the email.
I don't know. I think I'm okay. I'm fine with it, and the reason I'm fine with it is because it's clear the Americans have adopted this European style of handling Ryder Cups now. Like, their assistant or their vice captains are going to become captains, and it's going to be sort of this just system. And if Furyk's the next guy up, that's fine, because as long as you have that system, you're going to have a lot of talent, you know? Like, you're going to have Justin Thomas playing five matches in Paris. You're going to have Patrick Reed just burning down the Eiffel Tower. So I'm fine with Furyk. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I wasn't even listening. I just wanted to share my take on this, okay? So I just brought it up so I could talk. So first of all, I'm fine with Furyk being captain. I think he'd make an excellent captain, and I was actually very much in support of it because I had assumed that meant he is out of the running to play as a playing member of the U.S. Ryder Cup team. He has been a part of nine U.S. Ryder Cup teams. He's had a losing record in eight of them. He's been a part of seven losing teams. We went through a bit of a transition year that he was not a part of. I'm not saying that because Furyk wasn't on the 2016 team, that's the reason the U.S. won. But we are again entering this period of time where we have so many good young players that don't have the scar tissue of losing seven Ryder Cups that Jim Furyk should be forever not considered as a member of the team. I know he wants to win. I know he has had an excellent career, incredible Hall of Fame player, major champion, perennial top 10, top 5 player in the world. No disrespect to his career. I would have thought people understood that part of my take. But, of course, when it was brought up during the press conference, like, would he consider being a playing captain, and he didn't rule it out, I thought that was a mistake from day one. And I think that it should not even come close to being a distraction for the team. He should. I know that being a captain is not, I don't think, takes that. It takes a lot of energy. It's a lot of handling the press. It is a tough process. But actually, being a good captain is not that hard. It's not like he needs to focus on being a good captain. That's not what my take is. But I just think it should not even come close to being a distraction for the team. And I know the media is going to go nuts with it. As soon as he shoots a 63, oh, could Furyk be a playing captain? And sure enough, Morning Drive tweeted out, like, should Jim Furyk be a playing captain on the right, or could he be a playing captain? So I just retweeted it and said, Oh, yeah, sure. Why not? The worst Ryder Cup player the U.S. has ever had. Let's let him be the captain and play in the event at age 48. And sure enough, Gary Williams had to address it on the, live on the air, which I kind of felt bad. But, I mean, it should not. He should have ruled that out from the very beginning. It should be, and people are already talking about, you know, if he does play on it, somebody else will take over captaincy roles. It's just the last thing I want to see is that kind of distraction leading up into it. And I just think that we should be moving on from that part. I mean, it's, I don't know, it should be a done deal. He should eliminate himself from any consideration of playing for the Cup. Is that a fair take?
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't really matter because we all know that Patrick Reed's the captain anyway. I did love the screen grab of Gary Williams' face on your tweet. He looked like he would rather carry Jim Furyk's bag for the next 2 years than address your tweet on Morning Drive.
I couldn't believe they made him address it. I kind of felt bad after that. I'm just sitting at work spouting off my Furyk opinions, and little did I know it was going to make TV. But
just spewing Ryder Cup takes.
A clean 21 months in advance, but yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know that he should have ruled himself. I'm just already annoyed with it. like you said, we're 21 months away. I'm just annoyed with the idea that he could be a playing captain. But I presume it will not be an issue because he, I don't think, will be close enough to making the team. Although he was this year, and he was out with a wrist injury for however long, and then Davis Love ran his 10,000 simulations of where Furyk would have been if he would have played, and it's like, what the hell are we doing? Like, still Justin Thomas on the team. My gosh, it's not that hard. I don't know.
If Bubba gets selected as a captain's pick, is he going to go back to Paris, or does he still not like Paris? The big tower thing? You think he's going to go visit it again?
There's definitely going to be an international incident in 2018. True story, I went to visit my boss after the Ryder Cup, and he said, our CBS headquarters are down in Florida, and he said, you know, you've been doing a good job. I've enjoyed you traveling. I think when you travel, you know, it's been good. We've gotten good stories and stuff like that. And he said, is there anything else you'd like to do? And I said, Paris is next year. And he looked at me and goes, let's not get carried away.
You got to build up to that. You got to start with Memorial. Come on, that's the one you go to, and you do a great job at Memorial, then you build up to Paris.
I don't know. I know you. Are you going to be there at Paris?
I don't know, man. I have no idea.
I thought your 5-year plan in life was based around Ryder Cup locations.
I mean, I'm hoping to be caddying or playing. I might be caddying for the European team at that point. Who knows? I mean, I would definitely love to be there. You can't ever top what we experienced in 2016, though. I mean, that's like, that was the greatest in-person sports experience I think I've ever had. But
yeah,
it'd be fun to hear. Anything we missed? Because I've got you for an hour now. Have we covered it all?
Do we want to hit a few more questions?
We can. I mean, I feel bad taking you for over an hour here, but
give me like two or three more. I'm having fun.
Here's a good one. Kevin Power. If I'm Michael Greller, well, we kind of already covered this, but if I'm Michael Greller, am I having second thoughts? Who has the better season in 2017, Thomas or Spieth? Yeah, we kind of covered that, but
yeah, because Greller used to caddy for Thomas when they were,
yeah,
was that the junior U.S. Open or something?
Yeah, something like that. How many preppy Salmon wants to know how many beers did Solly shake and spray over himself like champagne after JT's show the past 2 weeks?
I think you just went straight for the champagne, didn't you?
I was asleep, man. I stayed up till 2:30 and it didn't finish until like after 4 my time. And he was up by 7 with like 7 holes to go. That's just the funny thing. I was like, I'm kind of bored with Thomas winning at this point. I mean, I couldn't even stay awake for it. No, Hawaii is, it's like 11 hour time difference for me. It's the worst it's possible. Tucker Blankenship wants to know if you could rank the West Coast events for best viewing experience.
Ooh, that's a good one. So viewing experience, it's hard because Pebble is obviously the best visceral experience, but It's also kind of brutal because the rounds are like 7.5 hours.
That's the worst. That might be the worst viewing experience on tour for the year, I think, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the scenery is incredible, but I don't get you in any trouble. Go say anything else about Pebble. I gotta go Riv. That's my favorite.
Yeah. That was on my kind of bucket list of courses that I wanted to go cover. I got to go last year. Stayed with my brother lives in Los Angeles. I got to go cover it there, and that place is spectacular. It's pretty awesome. So yeah, I'll go Riviera as well.
Spieth playing it this year?
I don't know. Isn't he like hawking shoes in Japan right now or something?
I mean, yeah, but it's a couple weeks out, isn't it? And
I think he is. I mean, it's gonna be loaded. Big Cat's coming back.
Yeah.
Hopefully Rory plays in it. I think Spieth will always play that event. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, I feel like he was kind of a late commit to it last year, but I don't know. And I can't speak on it. I hope he does play. Why can't I think of what's after the Humana or the Career Builder or whatever it is now?
Torrey.
That's Torrey and then Phoenix and then Riv?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Wow, so Cat really is coming back very soon. Yeah. We didn't get any Tiger questions actually, but what are we expecting from that four out of five week stretch from him?
I don't know. I mean, should we call Jack Nicklaus and see what he thinks?
Probably pick him to win the Masters, I'm pretty sure.
I still go back and you and I are just banging on this drum, but he played in the third to last group at the Masters in 2015. Like I don't know. I don't think he's going to win this year, but I think he's going to have a couple like top tens, top fives. I think he'll be fine. Like, I don't think it's going to be embarrassing.
Are we not concerned that he writes longer blog posts than you and I do now? Like, is that not?
Yeah. One of the great tweets of all time. I thought, try going back to 2008 and telling yourself that Tiger Woods is blogging about playing golf with President-elect Trump
and hasn't won a major.
That was spectacular. I was trying to tell my wife about funny stuff I see on Twitter, and she's like, "You're an idiot."
Stop!
Like,
just stop.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer for this one, but Mark Kearney asked a great question. If there was a no laying up government, who's in charge? Shirley Mickelson is finance and Jason Day is health. I don't know what health is. Is that a role in the government? Department of Health, I guess?
Mickelson is finance. That is, Mickelson. I don't know if we've talked about this, but he would be the greatest, like, if he just, like, ran a Twitter account, it would be the greatest thing ever. Like, he would just sit there and troll Tiger and, like, just, he would do, like, screenshots of his betting slips in Vegas. I mean, it would just be amazing.
I'm working up enough courage or time to go by to ask Bones what the chances are of getting Phil on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, that would be insane.
Yeah, I don't know if I could handle it. I think I would lose it. I try. It was hard keeping it together for Bones.
You should ask him if you get to talk to him. You need to ask him what he thinks about Rory saying, "What the F are you guys doing at the 2014 PGA Championship?"
Oh yeah, I did bring that up with Bones because I still think about that tournament. I think that was the weirdest finish to a golf tournament ever. And I think it would be great to have like the three of them. Ricky, if I had Ricky, Phil, and Rory in the room to talk about it. First of all, Ricky probably wouldn't say a word. And Phil would probably talk the entire time. But I would love to hear their real thoughts on that entire finish. I don't know why I still think about that event. But
that'd be a great 30 for 30.
There we go. All right. We're over an hour. I'm going to let you go. I don't see any questions here that are really sticking out to me that much. But anything else we missed that you can think of?
No, you guys are doing a great job. It's I know you don't have me on to say this, but it's been a blast to follow your journey. And I appreciate the gear you sent me.
Yeah.
The Rory shirt, which I the I Can't Hear You shirt, which everybody should go buy. It's the greatest. That whole, there should be a 30 for 30 on that eighth hole.
Just on the eighth hole.
So yeah, it's always fun to come on and talk golf, and I can't imagine, you know, when I started covering golf like 4 years ago, I was just looking to jump in to cover any sport, and I kind of fell into golf, didn't know a ton about it, and so it's been fun to kind of be along with you and Bacon and Van Valkenburg and all of our group, and I don't know, golf is amazing right now. Like, I just freaking love it. Like, I love tuning in, I love following along, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's fun. It's funny, like, how these relationships have formed just basically because of Twitter and because of social media, and it's been has been a lot of fun. It's been a crazy few years. I think you were one of the first podcast guests. You were second only to Bacon to ever be a guest on the podcast. And I think like maybe 28 people downloaded that first podcast, but you still said yes when we asked you to come on, and you're still with us, so it's much appreciated. I do have to give a quick shout out as a request from a coworker of mine, Ryan Sakamoto. I hope I'm saying that right. Listening from La Canada, California. Again, I don't know if I'm saying either of those right, but wanted to bury that in there. You're only a true diehard if you're still here, hour and 10 minutes in, but. Thank you to Kyle for coming on. We'll do probably a Masters one. Are you going to the Masters?
I am, yes. Yeah. Hopefully I don't see the things that I saw last year.
Please no. Please no. Unspeakable things.
Unspeakable, unprintable things.
All right, Kyle, we're going to let you go. Thank you for your time. Happy Monday, and we'll be in touch, man.
Okay, talk to you later.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most.
Better than most!